Ashland Doyle, Ashland Doyle, we all live near Ashland Doyle. Radiation's in the air, radiation's in the soil. Ashland Doyle, Ashland Doyle, we're all down near Ashland Doyle.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Entertainment live on 1480 AM KPHX in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Dave alongside, yes, the guy from the Ozarks, Joseph J. Eric, a lovely Kathleen, and Jake has joined us in the green room, I believe.
Who's playing the banjo?
This is the from the movie Deliverance, a movie that was written, acted, and lived through most of those experiences in Deliverance. He played alongside Burt Reynolds. Joseph J., how was that experience?
It was just pleasant. Absolutely pleasant.
This is one of my favorite artists.
Who is it?
It says Unknown.
Oh, the Unknown. Remember the Unknown comic?
I saw that guy live. He was funny.
Yeah, he's pretty funny. Actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I didn't know who was saying this, but this is a folk song.
I went to the bathroom when I was watching it, when I was in the audience for the Unknown comic. And
oh.
When I came back from the bathroom, he goes, "Hey, could you hear us in there?" I go, "No." He goes, "We could hear you."
Wow.
That's funny. That's too funny.
Well, of course, Ashland Doyle bringing us into this segment.
Yes.
Of course, we are talking about the new film, Deepwater Horizon. Yes, the movie is called Deepwater Horizon. It opened up yesterday, stars Mark Wahlberg. Dave liked it. Trisha liked it. I thought it was pretty good, too.
Yeah.
So check it out. And, of course, now we have on someone who is going to take us even further behind the scenes, something that is not addressed in the film, but something that is very important, something that we really heard a lot about after this disaster. Lisa DePinto, senior scientist with the Natural Resource Damage Assessment Program with NOAA. Lisa, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me on. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And now I understand that there are a few things that we cannot ask you because certain litigation and whatnot, and we don't want to get anyone in trouble. We know all those rules all too well. But first of all, tell us a little bit about what are the steps that are taken when something like this occurs, when a disaster like this occurs.
Yeah, so let me just first say this disaster was definitely unprecedented in the world that I operate in and, frankly, in the world. We've never had a spill, an explosion, a disaster like this ever. So everything was, you know, magnified significantly following, you know, the Deepwater Horizon incident. But typically when we have an incident, I work for NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, so I can speak to the role that we serve when there is a release of oil or another hazardous material like chemical spill or something like that. So when something happens like this, we have a team of emergency responders who provide support to the Coast Guard, scientific support, to help them figure out, you know, what has been released, protect human life, as a, you know, a number one priority. But our role is to figure out what has been released, what the hazards associated with it are, and to figure out where it's going and how long it's going to be there. And the Emergency Response Division scientists will give information to the Coast Guard to help them direct, you know, boats and planes and things that are available to help clean up the chemical or the oil that's been released into the environment. So our guys in the Emergency Response Division will be out doing overflights in airplanes or helicopters, you know, trying to document where the oil goes, or they'll be out in boats collecting samples and taking it to a lab and analyzing it to see what, you know, what it's made of and, you know, what some of the hazards associated with it are. And then there's a whole team that's, you know, we call them the home team, that work out of our office in Seattle, where they, you know, model where the product is going to go in the environment and what the resources are that are likely to be affected by whatever the contaminant is. And in this case, it was a lot of oil.
Mm-hmm. Now,
covering a large area in the Gulf, yeah.
Yeah, Lisa, this is Dave. And, you know, what was interesting to me is BP did an awful lot of PR work, commercials many times a day for years to, you know, I guess to reestablish some type of trust, I believe, with the American public. But as of today, is it ongoing? Is it still a problem, this oil spill? And if so, how is it a problem as of today?
Yeah, yeah, I know definitely BP was out with a campaign trying to promote that the Gulf beaches were clean and the seafood safe to eat, and there has been extensive seafood testing, and, you know, we've deemed that the seafood is, you know, free of BP oil. But there are areas of the Gulf that will have longer-lasting effects from the oil. So there are areas along the shoreline where oil came, you know, you got to remember this oil spill happened 50 miles offshore and a mile deep, but oil made its way to shore, as is no surprise to anyone, and there are some areas where that oil is going to persist, you know, for years to come. So there are areas of the shoreline that continue to be affected and are fouled by oil. A lot of the oil, you know, you can imagine the release occurred also a mile deep, 50 miles offshore. So some of that oil also sank down to the bottom, to the sea bottom. And so, you know, we've done some studies immediately following the spill that documented where the oil went there. And then I think as recently as 2014, we went out and documented that there's still some oil that is going to persist on the seafloor as well and cause, you know, harm to the critters and the things that live down in the deep sea. Like there's these really rare deep sea corals that are, you know, hundreds to over 1,000 years old that got oiled. And so oil, as it persists down there, will continue to impact air, you know, the guys that live in the affected area.
Now, this took, it seemed like, from the average general public point of view, a long time to cap this well. And I'm just curious, from your standpoint, it seemed not like a long time because of the problems, but what was the problem to cap, you know, this and shut the oil off from you know, going up to going into the ocean?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not an expert in that area, but yes, it, you know, 87 days, 3 months roughly is the longest oil spill we've ever dealt with. So you're right on the money. I mean, it's the longest and the largest that we've ever had to deal with. And part of the problem of trying to cap something like that is, you know, the conditions you're operating in, 50 miles offshore and a mile deep under, you know, that oil is coming out, you know, at an extremely high rate of pressure. So it's really hard to get there and either do an interception well. You know, that takes a really long time to intercept the oil before it's coming out of the broken riser pipe, or trying to get a cap on that is stable and is going to maintain integrity is just, you know, my understanding is it's just really a challenging environment to work in.
Absolutely. If anyone's just now joining us, we are speaking with Lisa DePinto, senior scientist with the Natural Resource Damage Assessment Program with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. That is a mouthful. And
that is the longest name in the world, isn't it?
It is. And Eric, go ahead.
I have a question. I'm reading here online about the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, and it says that it was capped in 2010, but there's still reports coming in that it may still be leaking. Is that true? Do you know anything about that?
There may be reports that it's still leaking, but I'm not aware. If those reports exist, it's, to my knowledge, it's not leaking in any kind of way that is going to have me going back out there doing another assessment.
Now, will
so
they...
That's not been brought to my attention, no.
Now, will they ever... be able to get oil out of that well, or is it too risky?
I couldn't answer that question either. I mean, I think a lot of the oil came out of the well, so I'm not sure what the profitability of going back in and digging out of, you know, going back to that particular well is. But that whole area is, you know, it's called the Macondo oil field. It's a whole area underground that has oil reservoir down there. So whether or not they re-tap the Deepwater Horizon wellhead, I'm guessing they won't, but I'm not an expert in that area. But that offshore oil reservoir exists out there, and I'm certain that that company and other companies are going to be going after the oil that's underneath the seabed down there.
Now, 43 or 47 miles out, is that still the United States, or is that up for grabs?
No, that's still waters that the United States has oversight over.
So how did BP get involved? I mean, were they under contract from the government, the United States government, or, I mean, who owns the oil? I mean, who has the rights to the oil, I guess I should
BP,
say?
BP, you know, I'm not exactly sure how it all works, but BP leases, you know, has oil leases there. And so they work with, you know, the U.S. government to get access to the oil fields there, and they get permits and leasing rights to develop and get oil out.
Yeah, that's a good question.
I didn't say that over the air. But.
Oh. Yeah, why wouldn't Eric asked why they? I may, maybe it's not in your, you know, in your jurisdiction.
It's just something to ponder.
But why wouldn't they give that to an American company? That was the question.
Or be- well, I think, you know, it's up for grabs for multiple oil companies to develop out there. So it's not just BP that's out there. There's other companies as well that market that harvest that oil.
Interesting. Well, yeah. I'm sure it's complex, and I'm sure, something happened, that's for sure. It looked, you know, from the movie, it was human error, but
right.
But maybe it was something different.
And something that, well, if anyone is just now joining us, we are speaking with Lisa DePinto, senior scientist with the Natural Resource Damage Assessment Program with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And so, Lisa, is there anything that we could do as normal citizens, or maybe anything that our listeners could do about not just this particular oil spill, but this problem in general, hazardous spills?
Well, I guess that question is twofold, obviously. I think after an incident happens, we typically have a rush of citizens, people that want to help out with the cleanup or in other ways addressing the environmental impacts associated with the spill. That was certainly the case following the Deepwater Horizon. And when we have spills, I mean, our program, we respond to over 100 spills a year, maybe on the order of maybe 150 spills a year.
Wow.
And when we have a significant spill, and by the way, as I said, most of them aren't as significant as Deepwater, we have a lot of people that want to help and they want to participate in the cleanup, which is something we often take volunteers into the program to help with the cleanup, although they have to be, you know, properly trained and, you know, receive some understanding of the risks of being out with the hazardous materials. There, we get volunteers that help us with the wildlife rehab. So, you know, on the Deepwater Horizon spill, we had a lot of birds that were oiled and, you know, other animals like turtles that were picked up by response workers and brought back to shore and rehabilitated. So volunteers sometimes help us with the wildlife rehabilitation. Sometimes we have volunteers that serve as like community liaisons that help us, you know, reach out to the people that live in the area that's been affected by the oil or the other hazardous materials. And they know, you know, how to communicate with, you know, they know who the citizens groups are that we need to transfer information to, for example. So there's a lot of opportunities after an incident happens for the public to get involved and help with the response activities, you know. But obviously, the bigger interest, you know, from my perspective, would be to figure out ways to prevent these things from happening to begin with.
Absolutely, absolutely. And have you seen the film yet? I'm curious.
No, and I can't decide if I want to see it or not. Like, you know, so I've been engaged in the Deepwater Horizon. It's called a natural resource damage assessment, where we've just been out doing studies on the, you know, across the entire Gulf of Mexico environment, you know, from the shorelines all the way off to the deep sea. And I've just done nothing but live, you know, studying the impacts of the oil in the environment. So every time I see the movie trailer, I have a little debate, like, do I want to see the movie or do I just, I don't know if I can stand to watch it. I don't know.
Did you know personally many of the people, the crew on the rig there?
I didn't personally know the crew, but it just really affects me. And I know a lot of my coworkers, especially the emergency response workers, who had to fly over the rig every day and just think about the lives that were lost. And I know I've talked to a couple of the response workers who just still, you know, get choked up when they think about, you know, the loss of lives that happened as a result of the accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
and, you know, and it's also hard to see, you know, talking to some of the workers that worked on my phase of the case, which is, you know, quantifying the environmental impacts and, you know, working with people that, you know, are looking at, you know, the over 1,000 dolphins that washed ashore.
Wow.
That were harmed by the oil, or people that have to deal with picking up the birds that were that had either died or trying to rehab boiled birds that are really sick. I mean, all of that, you know, the loss of human lives is tragic, and the loss of the resources, too, really takes a toll on people that, you know, have to live it and work it. So that affects them.
Well, Lisa DePinto, senior scientist with the Natural Resource Damage Assessment Program with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, thank you so much for joining us, and have a great weekend.
All right. Well, thanks for having me on. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Wow. Yeah, she was really interesting.
Yeah. Very great show. Very, very informative. Now go out and see.
Yeah.
Deepwater Horizon opened up yesterday. We all agree you should check it out.
I agree.
You know some behind the scenes. And this song is a song that was made popular after the oil spill, the Deepwater Horizon oil spill. Pete Seeger singing.
After? This guy's from like the 60s.
I know, but the song is from after.
What's it called?
It was like a, I think it might have been a fundraiser song.
Oh, I never.
God's Counting on Me, God's Counting on You.
Oh, gotcha. And this is Breakthrough Entertainment Live, 1480 AM KPHX. Next week, I don't think Joseph J. will be here, but I will be here.
It'll be a great show.
A lot
I have confidence.
Of fun. I have confidence, too. Everyone, have a great weekend. Trickle down, God's counting on me.